You're listening to Manipulation Games Psychology and Marketing Podcast with your hosts, Gene and Darren.
We should probably start this podcast just by introducing like ourselves and like the podcast, and we don't have a name for it.
The theme that we've been talking about lately is about allowing things to sort of evolve organically, right?
Yeah.
Is that you can't always figure things out ahead of time. And so sometimes you have to let your creativity and you have to kind of capture the chaos.
That's exactly what we're doing right now.
Right.
So diving into a podcast, we have no idea if it's going to be successful, but we're trying to capture this randomness, this the chaos.
Yeah. Well, it kind of reminds me of this thing where in Jungian psychology, right? Jung was very, very influenced by the ideas like the archetypes and tarot cards and stuff like that, right?
Interesting.
And one of the kind of my favorite kind of tarot card, and I guess it's the main tarot card that kind of applies to Jungian psychology, is the Fool.
Ooh.
The zero card, right? And the picture of the Fool in the tarot card is a youth walking off a cliff blissfully, unaware.
That's hilarious. I love the imagery.
Right. And so in Jungian psychology, the idea is that as you kind of evolve psychologically, you go through different stages, right? But then it kind of loops back on itself. So by the end, you end up like somewhere like you end up being the king, right? It's the hero's journey of like storytelling, right?
Yeah.
But then eventually you always come back to being a fool.
Just walking off a cliff. So it's like cyclical.
Right. It's a cyclical thing. Yeah. It's a cyclical kind of, you know, way of looking at our development of our psyche.
I love that. That's
and so cool. You know, the fool walking off the cliff, it's the first step of the hero's journey.
Oh, wow.
Right?
That's hilarious. So basically we have to be on the lookout. Okay, are we falling off? Are we reverting back to our old foolish ways,
like, which is good too, right? Yeah, sometimes you have to go back to, you know, being Luke Skywalker right at the beginning, right? Or Harry Potter at the beginning, where you walk off, you have to walk off the cliff to go to a different place to evolve. Do you know about this whole hero's journey, Joseph Campbell stuff?
No.
Oh, okay.
Can you explain?
It's fun stuff. In short, Joseph Campbell was an anthropologist. And he ended up writing this book called A Hero of a Thousand Faces.
Okay.
And what he did is he was looking at stories throughout different cultures and trying to like line them up together and try to figure out what if there was like a universal story that would every culture would tell, right? Basically, if there was a story essentially mapped into our brains, the way we make sense of the world, if that it basically creates a story, right?
Yeah.
And essentially, he found that. And that's what people call the hero's journey. One of Joseph Campbell's neighbors was a guy named George Lucas. And George Lucas basically was very influenced by that. And the hero's journey is it's a pretty standard formula. It's essentially you have the youth, a fool, kind of at the beginning of the story. At some point in time, they come to a point where they have to leave the known and enter the unknown. At which point they have to face challenges and dangers and transform. And then they return to the known, to their kingdom, to essentially lead.
So basically the plot of Star Wars.
It's a plot of Star Wars. It's a plot of Harry Potter. Yeah. It's a plot of, I mean, most major stories. Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah.
You have, you know, Frodo, right? This thing is thrust upon him, this ring that he has to deliver into danger, right?
Yeah.
So he has to leave home, meet all these different characters, essentially fight dragons, find treasure, and to complete the mission, right? And so that the hero's journey, right, is what Joseph Campbell is able to essentially establish and categorize by collecting all these stories and figuring out, like, what are the similarities, right?
That makes so much sense.
Right. And
so
then
Frodo goes and blows up the Death Star, essentially.
Exactly.
It's the same plot of Star Wars.
It's the same plot. And it's because these stories, you know, if you go back to Arthurian legend, or you go back to even like, you know, reading the Odyssey, right? The Odyssey, it's a story of a young man, Telemachus, trying to figure out what the hell happened to his dad. Obviously, Odysseus is kind of the main character, but Telemachus is trying to figure out what happened to his dad. Athena, goddess, turns herself into an old man named Mentor.
Whoa, okay. The Mentor.
Which is where the word mentor comes from.
Interesting.
And Mentor tells Telemachus, basically, you need to go out there looking for your dad to figure out what happened to him.
Yeah.
And so basically, you know, Telemachus leaves, you know, home to search for stories about what happened to his dad.
Wow.
you know, and essentially to become a man. As a young man, he has to leave home, go on an adventure to become, you know, evolved, right?
Yeah, I can't get Star Wars out of my head now, because now I'm just going to compare everything to the plot of Star Wars.
But yeah, no, it's, Star Wars does a great job kind of telling that
just,
story.
You know, young person leaving home and discovering whatever they need to do to conquer whatever sort of like evil or demons or whatever that may be, whether it's like Lord Sauron or, you know.
Exactly. You
know, or Darth Vader. Yeah. It's all the same. Archetype of like stories.
Yeah. And so what Carl Jung was doing is that he's essentially using that storytelling, because our brains a lot of times think in symbols, as a way of explaining our own psychological journeys. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So if we want to evolve as human beings, we cannot stay in the known. Uh-huh. We have to step out into the unknown.
I see.
And when we step out into the unknown, we're always going to be the fool. Because we don't have experience. We don't know anything, right?
Falling off that cliff, yeah.
And generally, as you cross that threshold into the unknown, right, there's usually a gatekeeper or a hierophant, which would be like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh.
The person who helps the person cross from the known to the unknown.
Yeah.
Or Gandalf, right?
Yeah.
Or Dumbledore, or I don't know, somebody, right?
Yeah.
And then as you kind of master the unknown, eventually you become the Jedi Master, right? So Luke, by the end, is the Jedi Master.
Interesting. So basically, Jung was saying we should live out our own lives, essentially, to the essentially, plot of a lot of these hero stories.
Basically, using the hero's journey as a way of, one, analyzing our lives, right? But it's also a way we kind of inspire ourselves, because when we look at these stories, right, the reason we listen to stories is to be able to live out somebody else's life experience and learn from it.
Interesting.
Right. It's actually like one of the reasons I think probably people listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
So when you listen to podcasts, you're listening to one to vicariously maybe live through the lives of the people you're listening to and to glean wisdom from them that can apply to our own lives.
So you're saying a lot of this stuff is just inherent into our own DNA, probably, of like kind of like culturally as human beings, because when you go back to like the caveman days, we're sitting on a fire telling these stories and all these tales and trying to gain wisdom and trying to like go into the unknown, but also learning from like your elders about their stories about like hunting, for example, and these dangerous tales about like, oh my God, this happened, but I came out alive, you know? And like, it's all so inherent to our own kind of like psychology that, you know, we don't even know it, but we're living it out every single day.
Stories is how we make sense of the world.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, a lot of times, even when people go like through like therapy, right? Part of, you know, I guess therapy is you start analyzing the stories you tell yourself about yourself. You know, like, you know, I had an abusive father or something, right? And therefore now I don't feel secure in myself or something, right? So we make sense of the world through stories. And interestingly enough, probably at this point in history, the majority of our experience living life is consuming stories. Think about it. Like we spend so much time watching movies and TV shows. We spend so much time, you know, interacting with things like social media, which is you're basically watching short form stories, right? And so interestingly enough, like one of the, I guess, probably the traps of modern society is we spend less time living our own story and a lot more time consuming all the other stories.
Yeah, living vicariously through other people's stories, which is useful.
It is incredibly useful. It's very, very useful.
And we're just inherently drawn to it. Yeah, and it's fun and entertaining. But I think, like, again, from a practical standpoint, we need to actually do it ourselves.
Yeah,
and step into that unknown.
Yeah, and part of the things about, like, you know, when we're talking about this topic of, like, emotional resonance, right, is the ability to tell us ourselves stories or the correct stories. It's kind of like a psychological diet. We can actually shift ourselves over time, right? You know, if you constantly watch, I don't know, adventure movies about people seeking, you know, greatness, chances are there's going to be some aspect of that's going to reflect upon you as a person over long periods of time.
Yeah.
And so we can find ways of kind of tapping deeper into ourselves through the images we look at, through the music we listen to, through the movies we watch, the books we read.
Wow. So we were actually kind of defining our own kind of characteristics of how we behave through the stories that we selectively choose to listen to.
Interesting. Yeah. Is it, like, well, one interesting aspect is we have these unconscious movies that we're always playing in our minds, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say we are in a room and there's like a scary dog, mm-hmm. right? And we immediately develop like a fear response or something. Mm-hmm. The reason we have the fear response is partly is that somewhere in our mind we are playing out every possibility of every situation mm-hmm. that we're in, right? Mm-hmm. Which is our gut instinct, and we now have a movie somewhere in the back of our minds of what's potentially going to happen there, right?
Yeah.
And that applies to the same thing. Like, for example, if somebody goes out into to a party or out at night and they're experiencing like social anxiety, the reason they're probably experiencing social anxiety is they have an unconscious movie playing of various negative things that could be happening, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And then you're having the emotional reaction to the movies you're having in your head, right?
Yeah.
Because your brain at any moment in time is trying to keep you alive, right? And so it's trying to play out every possible scenario.
Yeah.
And it's doing it so fast that we don't even realize we're playing out these unconscious movies.
That's very interesting because, like, even just from myself, like, I personally try to avoid, like, a lot of news because, like, they're so depressing, always sad, and it gives you, like, anxiety. Like, oh, my God, someone's going to break into your home. You see all these news stories. But then, like, I don't want that kind of anxiety in my head all the time, so I like consciously selectively avoid those kind of stories.
Yeah,
but some people are just drawn to it, you know, because there it is kind of like saying, oh my god, like, oh my, someone broke into like a house in Porter Ranch or something. That's a few miles from here, like, what, oh my god, we need to like lock our doors and like make sure we're safe, and you know, like, you know what I mean?
But no, and I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, the news is interesting because, like, lately, like last few years, I've been watching the news a lot more. Because there's been a lot of, like, I'm Ukrainian, so there's a lot of stuff happening in Ukraine. You know, I have family out there, but I've always liked Tim Ferriss has kind of an approach to like news, right? Well, he doesn't watch news, right? But like, for example, like, if you have like an election coming along, right?
Yeah.
His kind of point of view is that you don't pay attention to anything about it until the day before the election, and then you go to all your friends whose opinions you trust, and you ask them to summarize. What happened?
Interesting,
right?
Yeah,
because. You know, I've heard this somewhere before. You have your, you know, you have your circle of interest, but then you also have your circle of actual influence.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or your circle of concern, your circle of stuff you could actually have control over. Right. So let's say you're paying attention to news about an election for the year and a half of that whole like crazy news cycle. Your only ability to really have like influence, right? Mm-hmm. It's that last day when you vote.
Yeah,
right.
That's very
true. Or unless you start campaigning, there might be other, you know, ways of looking at it. But really, that information is not useful. And in some sense, most of the time we're consuming news, it's entertainment.
Yeah.
Right. We're bored.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so yeah. So like our information diet is actually kind of a really important thing to think about.
So would I be practicing information diet by like restricting myself to certain like things that I consume? Would that be?
Yeah,
like
I think
diet?
That's actually probably a good thing to do, right? You know, there's people who, like, let's say you're really into business, right? Mm-hmm. There's people who, instead of like listening to music as they drive, they only listen to like business books or business podcasts, right?
Yeah.
Or if you're, you know, whatever thing you're into, or it might make sense to be consuming the things that inspire you and like motivate you on a regular basis.
Yeah. I used to listen to music like in my car, like all the time. Like, I was never a podcast person.
Yeah.
But then, you know, like just one day I was like, oh, let me listen to a podcast. And then it's like, you know, now it's like years. Like, when I get in the car, I just listen to podcasts.
Yeah. You know,
but it's kind of weird just shifting from like, oh, I used to listen to music all the time to like, now I'm listening to podcasts. And I don't think I've made that conscious decision. It's just like, I just decided to play podcasts one day, and next thing you know, that's all I'm consuming in my car.
Like, what are some of the favorite topics or podcasts you listen to? Like, what are things you think you're like naturally being pulled towards?
Like comedy. Like comedy, comedy podcasts, like comedians, they're hilarious. Like, I listen to Adam Carolla a lot because He's funny. I've been listening to him. Like he used to be on Loveline, this old show. Right?
Okay, I remember back from the days of the Man Show.
Oh, and the Man Show. Yes, yeah. I love the Man
remember
Show.
Remember on Spike TV?
Yeah,
way back
yeah,
when?
Yeah. With
Jimmy Kimmel.
Jimmy Kimmel.
That's Jimmy right. Kimmel. That's Adam right. Carolla.
Yeah, Adam Carolla. But it's kind of weird because, like, you know, he has a very dry sense of humor, and like. I just listen to it in the car now, and like in the background,
yeah.
Because he has almost a show almost like every day, almost. So it's like I know that I'm gonna always have like new content to listen to.
Yeah.
And like I don't even pay attention like half the time I'm driving. I'm just like my mind is elsewhere, but it's like comforting. Like it's like you're in a car with somebody like an old friend that
He's
you know.
Like an old friend. Yeah. That's, yeah. Like, exactly. That's the crazy thing about podcasts, yeah. Right?
It's so. But you know, I never thought about that. You know, as like, oh my god, it's such an intimate kind of conversation I'm having. Even though I'm not talking to them, but they're in my head all the time in my car. So that's what people talk about podcasts. Oh my God, it's like so like, it's so resonant, I guess.
It is. It is absolutely resonant, yeah. Right? It's our ability to connect with people. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we've talked about how like authenticity, mm-hmm. you know, people being kind of real. And usually that means like people being kind of open and vulnerable about their actual experience, right? Mm-hmm. Really pulls people in.
Yeah.
Right.
So let me ask you, Gene, like for podcasting to our new venture, like what is your motivation and what are your goals to kind of get out of this from yourself?
From podcasting?
Yeah.
There's a couple of things. I think it's a good way to help evolve ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like when I was in school, at one point in time, I thought I was going to go get my PhD,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. But at that point in time, like I didn't really have a particular direction I wanted to take, right? Uh-huh. And I was like writing things down into potentially like a book about this topic, resonance, right? Uh-huh. But I just couldn't get it over the hill on it, right? But I feel like podcasts, I think when you are communicating with people about certain topics, you evolve
your understanding. I think it resonates too. Because just from like talking to you, like when you say something like brilliant, like, oh, you know, the 30-day rule. He's like, I'm like, whoa, that's awesome.
Yeah, so like, so I think it's a cool way to like kind of evolve your own uh-huh. thinking.
Yeah.
And then, so part of it, so evolving your own thinking, right? Mm. And then as you're doing it, potentially taking other people on that journey with you, right? Because there's a lot of like weird little tricks or ideas that I come up with just for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm trying to get leverage on myself as a human being to be a better human being.
Yeah, you're telling me a little about this, you know, about like the whole, like, you know, like a marathon runner. It's like if you tell yourself you're just one more step, right?
Yeah, the one more
then
step
you trick
phenomenon.
Your brain into just running 27 miles.
You can keep going, right? Yeah. And it's a lot of marathon runners talk about it or long distance cyclists or kind of thing. And everyone calls it a little bit differently. But I remember I was in a situation where I had to move a lot of bricks.
Oh, yeah.
We were doing some construction on the house and I realized like it was a really annoying task, but I was like, I just kept telling myself one more brick.
Yeah.
This is the last one.
Yeah.
This is the last one. Right.
Yeah.
And what you discover it happens to us in the reverse. A lot of times when we're on like Wikipedia or YouTube, right? This is the last video I'm going to watch. This is the last video I'm going to watch. Right. But you can also do that for positive things, right? Uh-huh. You just don't tell yourself like, I'm going to work out every day this year. You tell yourself like, no, this is the last workout I have to do this year.
Yeah.
This is the last workout I have to do this year. And weirdly, it's like your higher brain is tricking your lower brain into taking the action. And then you can keep doing it over and over again. Because I think like the lower brain doesn't have memory.
It's not as sophisticated. It's just reactive.
So you just tell yourself like last one.
And it believes you. It believes you. Yeah. It's like, oh, this is the last brick. Okay. I can like put in another effort to like put
And you
there.
Hear about these ultra marathoners, right? And they use this technique. They're like, this is the last 15 seconds.
Yeah.
I'm going to run and then I can stop. And then I can take a break.
Yeah.
Or sometimes I've heard some have... they listen to a song over and over again on repeat. And it's like, this is the last repetition of this song that I'm going to run before I take a break.
Yeah.
They just keep going.
Yeah. It's such a cool mind hack. Matthew, I think that deserves a chime.
Yeah. So.
Another brilliant gene-ism. Maybe we can call that.
Oh, man.
We're going to try to get your ego up a little bit.
Okay. So gene-isms.
Gene-isms.
As a podcast name. Boom. Yeah.
Gene-isms.
Okay.
You're going to be the next motivational uplifting like speaker.
That'd be actually pretty cool because I have to say I've benefited a lot from a lot of the thought leaders that've been out there. I think one of the first ones I remember I had a mentor in martial arts, and I think probably the first like moment where things clicked for me is he handed me that book, The 4-Hour Workweek by Timothy Ferris.
Wow.
Right. And I was like 15 years old or something, right?
I love that cell already. 4 hours. It gets your attention.
It's brilliant, like, right? What? But there's like, you know, what Tim Ferriss is really good about is taking these like more complicated ideas and finding like a way to encapsulate it as a single phrase, right? Into like a nugget, right? Yeah. And like, so one of the main things, like the book is really covers only like two or three like really core ideas, right? Uh-huh. One of them is like, you can only manage what you can measure. Huh. Right? I use that every single day. Uh-huh. Like, so like when we're running campaigns or something, right? If it's a tough campaign, every single day I write down like the last 7 days of results so I can keep track and think about what is happening. You can only manage what you can measure.
Yeah, that kind of goes back to like, oh, do we need a genism chime? We need to write all these down put it in our show notes. Right. No, that kind of reminds me of like from psychology, or my girlfriend's a therapist, and she, you know, like you can, like my philosophy is very similar. It's like you can only, you shouldn't worry about things you can't control. Hmm. You know, it's kind of the same thought process. Yeah. It's like if you have no control over, for example, like if the Red Sox win the World Series, right? You can't let that affect your happiness because you have no control over it. You know what I mean? So why would you let something outside of your control, you know, affect your day-to-day activities, you know? But I like that approach too, because it's kind of like you can apply that to work. Like you can only manage things you can measure.
Yeah.
So like, don't worry about all the extra stuff that's like kind of up in the air that you can't really put a metric to.
Or you have to figure out a way to measure it.
That's another really good point.
That's the other aspect.
Yeah.
So like, here's an example. Uh-huh. I've had friends who've gone through like complicated times of trying to, for example, like find a job, right? Finding a job can be tricky. Mm-hmm. And what really, at the end of the day, it is a long-term marathon, right? And a lot of times, for example, you're looking for a job, you apply for a job, you maybe get very psychologically invested in that, right? Mm-hmm. But really, like the rule that my dad taught me about finding jobs is that you need to apply to 200 jobs.
Mm, yeah.
Right? And so essentially, it's like getting impressions in an advertising campaign.
Yeah.
You need to get in front of a certain amount of people on average to find the job, right? Yeah. And a lot of times what ends up happening is that people are not keeping track of the thing, right? The only thing you have to, like, if you're on a job search, the only thing you have to, like, really worry about is be applying and measure, right? And that it helps develop, like, momentum because you're like, oh, I got to 10.
Yeah.
Boom. Okay, now I'm at 20. Yeah. Boom, at 50, right?
Yeah, almost there.
Usually sometime around 200, like, something happens. Right. And if something doesn't happen, then that might tell you something where like, oh, I need to shift direction about how I present myself.
If you apply to 200 jobs, I mean, just from applying to 200 jobs, you have, you know, 1% chance you're going to get at least 2 job offers from just a very minimal chance of success.
So because you have to, you know, it's a lot of luck. Or the same thing with, you know, if you're like training and you're working out, right, and you're not measuring like your progress, the act of measuring helps turn it into like a video game.
They call it gamification.
Gamification, right? Exactly. So like you be able to like figure out if there's something you want to do, and you figure out a way to measure it so it becomes a game, then all of a sudden you can control it and manage it.
And it becomes more fun. Put more bricks in the wall and kind of like keep yourself motivated.
Yeah, because if you're not tracking it, right, then it's hard to do something over long term, and it's the things you do over long term that have the greatest effect.
That's true. That goes into like, for example, the Atomic Habits, right? It's like it's all the little tiny things you do, but it's about the long term that most people don't think about, the results you get from the long term doing push-ups every day. You know?
There's another one that came up. I remember this is also I think came from the Tim Ferriss book. And I think it was under this chapter where he was talking about somebody who was having trouble losing weight. And what he started doing, this gentleman, was he started getting on the scale every single day and then writing down his weight.
Interesting.
Right. And that's the only thing he consciously did.
Wow.
Right. There's an alternative to this that they've done in kind of health psychology, is where every single time you eat a meal, you take a picture of it.
Oh.
Right.
So you actually see what you're eating and documenting it.
And the act of the gentleman just weighing himself every day and writing it down. Uh-huh. It's not necessarily that he changed anything about his diet specifically consciously, right? Uh-huh. It's just facing it every day.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, this is how many burritos you ate this month.
Right. It's sort of, yeah. So it's just being able to like look at it.
Yeah.
Allowed him over a period of a couple of years to lose all the excess weight.
Wow.
Because it's all of a sudden, again, it becomes a game. You start looking at it every day. It's like people weigh themselves all the time, right? Uh-huh. But if you actually write it down and you look at like, okay, you know, from this week to last week, and what happened?
Yeah.
Right? All of a sudden it turns into a game and it actually starts to unconsciously shift your behavior because you're trying to win the game.
Interesting. I think there's an app for that too, like on
apps, or whatever it is.
MyFitnessPal, where you have to log everything and then you see all the calories that you eat. And
so, like, but like the act of measuring, the act of actually tracking, the act of giving attention to something actually can change people's behavior.
So Gene, you're telling me we don't actually have to even try that hard. We can just have to measure, and just from measuring, we can actually make changes because we're just human beings and we don't want to, you know, be eating like a tons of crap.
Basically. Yeah, exactly. You have to find the right game for you to play, right? Because the past will always equal the future unless something very serious happens in the present.
Oh, you know what? I heard someone talk about this. It says, why wait until something tragic happens or something horrible happens to you? Why not make a change? But it's so hard for us to make that change unless something terrible happens to us.
Yeah. Right?
Like we have a heart attack, but by the time it's too late, like, why can't we as human beings make the change now without having to wait for a health problem?
Oh yeah, because we're not a single human being. That's the
that's another episode. I think we can
that's
talk
an
about.
Entire episode. But a lot of times, so let's say you're doing living your life and you're doing something wrong. And I remember I was helping my little sister play piano at one point in time. She's learning how to play piano, and one of the things that kind of came up out of that conversation, I was sitting there with her, I was like, and I'm saying like, when you make a mistake on playing the piano, you didn't make a mistake. Your brain made a mistake.
Oh, okay.
Because playing a piano is like such a complicated act. You, as the conscious self, are not playing the piano.
Interesting.
The only thing you could do is you could sit there and you could practice something very slowly and perfectly to feed your brain the actions you want it to take.
Oh.
But your brain is running the show anytime you're doing complicated actions, right? So when you live your life, the vast majority of time, you are not doing things. Your brain is doing things.
It's not my fault.
Exactly. Well, it takes a little bit of a pressure off himself. Yeah. But then it also starts giving you a little bit of a long-term view where you start realizing, okay, I need to retrain my brain to do the right thing over time. If you fail, or if the thing you're doing isn't working, you start thinking about like what's the new game I could play? What's the new way of measuring this I could do? What's the new way of approaching it that better helps your, you know, you get the result out of your brain that you want.
I feel like that's like another really cool mind hack that you can do. Like you can train your, I think, what is that? Your reptilian kind of brain or whatever.
Well, the reptilian brain is what kind of takes over a lot of times.
Yeah,
you know,
like whatever that's making you do something,
yeah,
you know, like automatically, right? Like subconsciously, if we can somehow trick it by like saying stuff over and over again, or you know what I mean? Like just repeating certain habits and then so you normalize it and make it like a pattern.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I love that.
And that's actually like a really interesting one. And potentially like in, you know, on other episodes, we can go deeper into this. But as one of the ways, thinking about from like a point of like resonance as a way of communicating deeper with a deeper part of the brain, a lot of times people do things like affirmations and they say things to themselves. And affirmations are cool.
Yeah.
They're useful, right? But I don't think a lot of those deeper parts of the brain communicate in words.
Okay.
Right? But I think they do communicate in symbols, in images, and in actions.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
And so what a lot of times when, let's say you want to do something and you want to shift behavior, it's important, instead of just telling yourself you're going to do it, is you have to take symbolic action.
Oh.
So let's say you're sitting right here right now and you're somebody who's wanting to start being, you know, better fitness and working out, right? Instead of telling yourself that, you get up and you do a push-up against the wall.
Oh, okay.
It's symbolic action. It's not something that's going to in any way shift your fitness or whatever it is. But if you were to do that and you would do that on the top of the hour, every hour while you're at work, the symbolic action is a commitment, is you telling their deep parts of the brain that you're actually committing to the thing, as opposed to you just saying that you're going to do it. Looking for symbolic actions or like little rituals.
Interesting.
I think is a way of being able to communicate to that deeper part of the brain to help you actually shift the directions.
I like that whole idea. Because again, I think, my girlfriend tells me she does this kind of, or she knows something about some sort of therapy where it's like semantic therapy, where you kind of touch different parts of your body and you tell yourself. It doesn't work when you just tell yourself to do something, but you have to associate it with like a physical act.
So something like that.
Like, this is my elbow and I'm not going to do this anymore. Like, you know, it's like, but it tricks your brain because a physical.
You do some sort of like connection. Yeah, a deeper thing than just saying it.
Yeah, like doing that push up when you're saying it, it's a physical act connects.
Or like, let's say you're trying to be, better financially, right? Like trying to be better at saving or something, right?
Yeah.
If at this moment in time you decide like it's something you want to do, then my next like step would be like I would open up, my investment app, and I would spend, coffee's worth of money to just buy a little bit of some stock.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not going to shift my financial situation, that drastically, but the symbolic action of actually taking it and doing it.
Yeah. So next time you go to Starbucks, it's like, just go, I'm not going to go to Starbucks. I'm going to put that $5 and put it into my stock.
Maybe. Portfolio. Right. Yeah. So you take that symbolic action because that's now real. That's not just you telling yourself to do something. You're doing something very small, potentially meaningless in the big scope of things, but you're now telling yourself, your deeper parts of yourself, that you're like, okay, this is something that I'm actually
committed.
That I'm actually going to try to do it, right?
Taking action.
And then you keep if you keep repeating those little actions, you start shifting your behavior.
I love that. I feel like this is turned from marketing to psychology, but I feel like they're both go hand in hand.
Well, because again, like your ability to influence others, which is what marketing is on a mass scale, is very well, it's very much tied with your ability to influence others on an interpersonal level, which a lot of times is things like sales, charisma, motivation, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Leadership, which is also very tied with how you influence yourself, right?
Yeah.
Like, so you're finding ways of essentially pushing buttons that create certain emotional resonance or certain kind of moods and vibes in people to get either the mass population, a person you're talking to, or yourself to shift directions or take the action you want to take.
I feel like if you can master yourself first, right, that would be a good approach to influencing the masses. if you look at it that
maybe
way.
I mean, that's definitely good if you could pull that off.
Yeah.
Right. But it's not necessarily always easy. But again, it's a lot of the things cross over. With that.
Yeah. Interesting. Anyways, I think we covered a lot of interesting
topics. Yeah, we just kind of
barely covered the topics we could probably discuss on this podcast.
Yeah, but it's a starting point. There's a couple of nuggets maybe in there.
A few gene-isms that we've got out of this test episode.
Anyway, but again, so very similarly as what we're talking about, right? Uh-huh. So we're trying to, essentially start a podcast network, right?
Yeah.
So us doing this video could potentially just be our symbolic action.
Right. Hey, let's take that into practice.
To put it into practice, right? You just being the fool stepping off the cliff.
We're stepping off the cliff right now.
And and again, it's I remember somewhere I heard this thing. It's like, how do you drive from Los Angeles to New York City in the dark, right? You just drive, right? Uh-huh. And you just see the next 30 feet. In your headlights.
And
eventually you get there. Right. And so you step off the cliff into the unknown and you figure it out. And so this is us putting this into practice, symbolic
stepping
action.
Stepping off the cliff.
So
podcast with Gene and Darren. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up.
You're listening to this, thank you guys for sticking with us.
Thank you for listening to us.